Hey, we got the fire chief himself, Travis, on this morning. Travis Jones, good morning, Travis.
Good morning, Travis.
Hey, good morning, guys. Just heard y'all talking, and I just wanted to say a couple things.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
And you guys have some questions, it sounded like, and I just want to clear those up for you if I could.
Yes, go ahead.
First, I want to say that the question about what started, who started, I feel I was in several meetings yesterday afternoon. Once that we notified the state fire marshal's office, they recognized the magnitude of this fire loss. So they have in turn called their counterparts with the federal government, which is the ATF, and they are launching an aggressive, pretty big investigation. They just using their resources with the federal government. The federal government has just tons of resources that they can throw at a situation as long as they see it valid. And I believe they do see this as a valid investigation because this is a large loss of property from a fire. So, I mean, the team that's going to be coming in, they won't be able to get started looking at that fire for a couple of days because it is still hot. But the biggest thing is now the site's dangerous. The site is very dangerous because there's corners of buildings that don't have roofs to tie them together, keep them safe. They'll have to bring in a team to assess the whole site. And I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see a crane down there in the next week or so. There's parts of that building they're going to have to take down before they can and clear out before they can go in there and actually start digging and investigating. I went down there yesterday right before I went home and went to bed, and I picked up a piece of that granite block that the building is built out of, just a piece of it.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I mean, just a piece of that falling from a fourth-story height would kill someone. So they've got a federal team that's probably going to come in. They're going to assess the site, see what's got to be done to make it safe first, and then they'll bring in others they're going to be down there for the next couple of weeks, and it's going to be pretty exciting to watch. But the biggest thing that I heard yesterday was people were like, oh my gosh, we lost the mill. And don't get me wrong, I have ties to that mill. My grandparents worked there. My dad worked there. But the bottom line is that mill, me and when Matt Millstone was fired there, we prepared for that fire. I can't tell you how much we prepared for that fire. And I'm kind of glad that it's actually happened and now it's behind us. You know what I mean? But the main thing that people don't see is that little small building that's 50 feet from it, and that's where we get our drinking water from.
Yes.
Yeah. That building was never the focus of our efforts. Our whole efforts from the time we arrived was save this building. We wrote that mill off. We wrote that thing off when we got there. Our whole effort was to get in front of it and keep that fire from getting to that water treatment plant. Because could you imagine where we would be today, right now, 24 hours later, if we didn't have drinking water or to flush our toilets? We would be looking like that site looks like, which is a third world country.
Yeah, I thought about that. I was wondering because, I mean, Flint, Michigan, we've heard they've had issues. But, I mean, that you shut that thing down, of course, that's a thing that nobody wants to be dealing with. And I want to ask you this because I heard this several times yesterday, that because of the chemicals that are inside that, the dangers of fire getting to that in an explosive potential nature there, and even more so, that it could carry over to, you know, how proximate it is to the bridge. Dam itself.
That building sits right up under the bridge. If you look down what they call the picker building, you know, the building to the smaller building on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
If you look down there from the building today and you see those trusses, those steel trusses that went across there, they're melted and warped. So if you can imagine that intense of a fire that would, because the filter plant's built out of the same, it's identical construction to the mill. So had that building became involved in fire, it would have done the same thing to our bridge. I mean, that amount of heat up under that bridge, so not only would we be crippled by no access to the east and west side of town, but I just can't express how proud I am of my guys for putting themselves in harm's way to protect the water supply. I mean, if that building would have been compromised, we wouldn't have had any water to fight fire, because from the time we got there, they put their pumps on overtime to keep the water towers full so that we had water to fight fire with. But I'm telling you, I just can't imagine where we would be today without water. I mean, we would just, it would shut our town down.
Yeah, we would be in bad shape.
It's like, it's like less than 100 feet from the front door where this is. And, of course, so whatever comes up next, if there's a future development, once all this has to be cleaned up, I would hope that there's a separation between the two. It is kind of scary to think about that. And you say putting your guys in harm's way. I talked to a couple of your guys there. I know that they were very close. I know how extreme the heat was, and I know you were there. And I want you to comment on that, as well as these walls crumbling around. And there were a couple of close calls, apparently, where people had to come back because of that once that started happening.
When we initially set up and arrived, we were down there between the two buildings somewhat. Our ladder truck went down there, kind of got there where they thought they could maybe put some water on the fire and kind of slow it down. But I knew that what, I mean, I've researched these fires. Every old town that has a, every old mill town that has a mill, they burn. It happened. You research any old town that had a mill, they burn. We were down there in that area to start with. Once the fire burned through the roof on the main big building, the radiant heat, I knew that we needed to get out of there, and we needed, when I say we, I say my command staff, I knew we needed to be out there and relocate to where we had a better advantage and we were not going to be compromised. So we moved up there to the top of the hill right there at the mill steps where we could kind of see, and I told the guys they had to get out there on the corners. Well, and I told the mayor this a long time ago. I said, this bill never happens, we may lose a fire truck, because I will put a fire truck right here, and its only job will be to put water to protect our water supply, our drinking water. And we did that, the plan that we had always practiced. I put it right where we thought we was going to do it. And we put them on it. And I say put them in harm's way. They were outside what we call the collapse zone.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you, stand up on top of that hill and every time you turn around behind the trees, all you see is orange glow. But the sounds of those walls falling in and those roof collapses, I can hear it now, but I can't tell you how it made me feel, because every time I heard it, I immediately thought of, are all my guys okay?
Yeah, pretty scary. Is it true that the heat melted headlights and things like that? I mean, those trucks, I know there was some damage possibly to some of those fire trucks.
Millbrook sent a ladder truck to help us. I think potentially, I don't know, because I haven't talked to the chief yet. I plan on calling him today and just telling him thank you. But they had some, you know, they had put outriggers down to stabilize the truck. I think they had set their outriggers down, and they wasn't able to get everything picked back up quick enough, because when that wall fell on the east side, the amount of heat that come out of that, I mean, the guy I had in charge on working that area over there, Friendship's fire chief, he said when that wall collapsed, he said the grass there, you know, around those parking areas and whatnot on the hill, immediately just ignited. I mean, that's how intense the heat was. They wasn't able to get the trucks moved quick enough, and I say damaged. I think it might have blistered the paint a little bit on the truck. If you don't have a hand line that you can keep water spraying on your truck, you will blister the paint and whatnot from that radiant heat if you're too close. And even though they were outside, we call the collapse zone. The collapse zone we consider to be 1.5 times the height of a building. That's how far we try to stay away from it. But but I cannot tell you the sound, just the sounds that it made. I mean, I just cringed every time. And every time I heard it, I called on the radio, "Camp for you people, are they okay?" And every time I heard everybody was okay, that's all I was worried about.
Wow. Compare, if you can, and these are completely different, but there's a lot of similarities in the fact that they're landmarks. With the hotel, and that was something that was able to be salvaged. There was a lot of damage, no doubt, but the hotel fire to what you had here, of course, much larger in scale as well at the old mill here.
The hotel, we had so many more exposures to worry about, and what we call an exposure is you have a fire building. The fire building is obviously the building involved in fire. And then exposures is every building that's around it that's potentially affected by the fire. And the good thing about the mill sitting down in that hole is the only exposures, again, was the bridge and the water treatment plant. Now, the radiant heat that finally started coming out of there, at one point, the houses up on Wallace Drive, believe it or not, that heat, because that building sits so low in the hole and they sit so high, that radiant heat very easily could have been enough to get those houses burning. But the guys up on top of the hill, we had two ladder trucks there pumping water to it that kept it cool enough. And the embers coming off of that fire, that magnitude, could have floated over there and got on top of one of those houses or anything like that. So the fire building itself, We wrote that off from the time we got there. We knew that would be a loss. The other problem was the water supply. That building had tons of fire hydrants around it, but the people who had went in there and started renovating the place had broken a pipe, had taken it, salvaged it. I don't know, but when we tried to turn the water on to all those fire hydrants where they could be utilized, water just started spraying out of the ground, so it just they had damaged the fire protection system around it. That we only had the city's water system to rely on. So, but the again, back to comparing it to the hotel, we just had so many buildings around it.
Yeah.
And hey, I'll give credit to the guys and our neighbors again who came to help. Generally, when there's a fire in your downtown block, you usually lose a block. We lost the original fire building and the damage that the hotel building received. So again, that was a great.
And plus, it's close to the store.
Yeah,
I consider that a success too. I mean, it doesn't look like it, but in the fire world, we consider that a win. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and when you bring up about the heat, how hot it was. I mean, you could feel it. We're several hundred feet back with the people who are watching from afar at the bridge, but you guys are right at close range. I can't imagine what that was like. And yes, I mean, if you got that kind of heat, and you call it radiant heat, I guess, if there are other buildings close by that are feeling, I mean, it's just, you can't stand it. If you put your hand close to a fire, you're still feeling the heat, right? I mean,
kind of thing. When we made the decision to move out from down there and go to the top of the hill there where we were, the Millbrook they had picked up and were backing out up the hill. I remember and talking to Eric Jones. He was the EMA director. He was in front of me and we were trying to get out of there and we had to stop because we were waiting on them to move. And I can just remember the heat coming through my passenger side window. I was like, I was blowing the horn. I was like, y'all got to go. This is hot. I don't have a water line, you know, to put on my vehicle or me to keep me cool. You know, I was, it was pretty intense. I mean, it was. I was telling Chief Misseldine. I said, "Hey, I said, well, you know, we had our career fire at the hotel. I said, this is definitely top stat. And I said, that's why I got you here to help support me. I said, I wanted you to be part of it too. So, and again, we talked about. You know, I told the guys whenever we were preparing for that fire to get to the edge and get close to the water treatment plant, I told them, I said, you guys can't imagine, I can't express how hot it's about to get and how you need to protect yourself. But most of all, we got to protect this building. And again, I'm almost to work, so I'm going to have to get off the phone in a few minutes. But the effort that those guys gave, that building to sustain no damage whatsoever, And again, the biggest overall thing is that nobody got hurt. We had over 100-something firefighters there at one time. None of them got hurt. May have had a little damage to a fire truck, but that could be fixed. So,
yeah, certainly. So this morning I saw a couple of guys. Is there anything going on this morning out there? Were they, anybody else called back? Did you know of?
No, I'm sure there's to be some onlookers and whatnot, and some of my guys could have been out there looking around. The police department had a guy there maintaining security of the site. There is potential evidence in there that the investigators will probably go in and try to recover today. And when I say evidence, I'd say just stuff that they want to cover all the bases with. So they have to maintain site security. I heard you mention earlier that some of the smoke was been pretty good, and it was. There was never really any fire into the, if you know what I'm talking about, when I say the office.
Yeah, that's area, what I call it. Yeah,
front office.
Yeah.
When I drove across the bridge this morning, I noticed that it was smoking pretty good, but it the smoke was white.
Yeah.
We call that cold smoke.
Yeah.
And that smoke didn't worry me at all. That's just something kind of burning wet, if that makes sense.
Okay.
There's been so much water poured into that building that there's a tunnel that runs between the mill and the filter plant, from where the filter plant used to only serve the mill. And there's a tunnel there that kept filling up the water because all the water we were putting into the building. And they had to get some pumps to come in and start pumping that out to keep from shutting the filter plant down. That was the other concern is we were about to flood the filter plant, and then that could in turn shut it down as well. So
that was a
big concern. And that's probably who you saw walking around down there this morning.
Yeah.
For those guys to keep an eye on that.
Sure. I was wondering, too, how much water? Do you have any kind of idea how much you guys pumped into this?
The filter plant will know. I'm going to develop a big report when it's all said and done, and they'll know. I didn't ask, but they keep up with those records.
How helpful is that helicopter that was shooting down water? I know that was a state agency. I guess it was law enforcement.
State troopers.
Yeah.
They have a team with that helicopter that they can actually do. Is I call it a multidiscipline. They can do that. They can perform rescues with it. It's equipped with a thermal imaging camera, so they can kind of come search for people. It's a great tool. I just happened to bring it up in conversation. You know, Brian Suave, he's one of our firefighters. He's also his full time job. He's a member. He's a state trooper. He's a member of the governor's protection detail. And we were just discussing. I said, man, it'd be great if that helicopter could come dump some water on the middle of this place for us and start cooling off. And he said they can. And I said, really? And when he confirmed that, I went to the EMA director because the EMA director is just a wealth of resources. When you need stuff, you want him in your hip pocket because he can get you stuff that you just can't call someone on the phone and say, hey, send me.
Yeah.
If he makes the phone call, there's agreements in place already, and it's no questions asked. They just come home. And I told him, I said, hey, I'd like to get that helicopter here. And he made a phone call, and they said, okay, we'll be there in about 30 minutes. And I was like, wow. So, that was great. I think that thing dumped about 350 gallons every time they dumped it. And he did that for about three hours or so. You know, that really helped out a lot. So,
One more thing. You guys do have a drone, and you were saying yesterday you didn't know how that would really come into play, but you say it really was a great tool during this, especially at night when you were looking on places that needed to be hit. How'd that work out?
Man, that was great. That when we were up there on that hill, obviously we lost our advantage to be able to see what was going on. And in a building that size, you can't see what's going on anyway. But we threw that drone in there and actually just flew it right above our heads and left it up there hovering. And the camera, the view of the camera, at one point I could see a ladder truck that was down in the back corner, and they were spraying water onto the building, and they couldn't tell that their water wasn't even having any effect, but we were able to see, and I called them and said, hey, you need to go a little over to your left and up a little bit, and So it provided a bird's eye view that was just amazing as far as an instant commander field to use. It was just a great tool to have.
Yeah, and I guess we've restored most of the utilities. I know there were a lot of different agencies there yesterday. You know, we lost Notasulga's prefix, got switched. They lost the switch on that. I saw the phone company there. I saw cable people there, the city utilities.
The power company was there working all night, switching stuff. We wound up, I think there was only power loss for like 45 seconds, the guy said.
Yeah, they were quick.
And they just shut off the power right there immediately around us to keep our guys safe. But the phone company, as far as I know, they came in there, they set some poles, got their lines back up, so all that should be back up and running. Bright House, I would suspect, I saw them in there some yesterday, but they're not down there this morning, so I would suspect all that has been cleared up as well. So there's no utility companies down there this morning still working, so to my knowledge, everything should be back on and working.
Well, you guys had a long, long night and day, and appreciate all you did, Travis. Thanks for checking in with us this morning as well.
Hey, I just wanted to clear up anything y'all had, but let me say this before I hang up, and I'm going to go. All the citizens that came out and brought us water and snacks and things like that, I can't tell you how much that means, but David Lawrence and the hospital, they fed us yesterday at lunchtime, so I want to tell them a big thank you, and everyone else who just, you know, came by and said thank you and dropped stuff off for us. I may have left somebody out, but if I did, I apologize. But anyway, everybody who did bring us stuff, we thank them a lot too. So,
well, we do. That was very thoughtful of all those guys and different organizations that chipped in. And again, thank you to you guys. Appreciate all who did their part, and we'll talk soon, Travis. Take care.
All right. Y'all have a good day.
You too. Thanks so much. Travis Jones, the Tallahassee Volunteer Fire Department Chief.